If you've been wanting to work with me one-on-one, this is for you. If you're an ambitious woman balancing the demands of motherhood and your career, or you're a business owner and you're done talking about your challenges and you are determined not only to find a solution, but to feel alive and energized while getting the support you need, I've got you. There's nothing more frustrating than asking for help only to feel like it's one more thing added to your to-do list. Head on over to heatherchauvin.com/focus. Take 2 minutes, fill out the application to work with me one-on-one, and we'll be in touch. One of my strengths and what my clients always tell me is I have a gift of looking at your current situation and showing you exactly where you need to focus to get the results your soul is craving. My work is designed to empower women like you to reclaim your capacity, increase profits, and strengthen your relationships. Join the countless women already seeing incredible results. Picture having me by your side every step of the way, ensuring your success. Visit Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/focus, and apply today. That's heatherchauvin.com/focus.
Understanding your teen from a conscious parenting approach. Hey guys, as you can tell, I have a nasty, nasty cold. And I'm probably going to share with you tomorrow about what I think this cold is trying to tell me and all the magic. I always think there's so much wisdom coming from our bodies. And I just got back from an amazing trip and I'll be talking more about that tomorrow. But today I wanted to talk about the interview that you're going to be listening to with Deanne Barrett. You can find her at gratitudework.com. So Deanne Barrett is the founder of Gratitude Works. Her mission is to guide moms to let go of the stress, worry, and guilt so that they can be the powerful, heart-centered leader that their teens desperately need. She's worked with women of all walks of life, and she loves sharing the conscious parenting approach. And today, her and I had an intimate conversation about teens and school and motivation and independence and respect. And I think it's just a very refreshing approach to diving into what it is like to raise a teenager. We didn't really get so much into the brain science of it or, how teens are different than other children, but I think you will walk away feeling, knowing that if you choose the conscious parenting approach, which means looking within yourself to understand, who are you, how are you attaching yourself to your child in this relationship, I think you're going to gain a lot of value from today's conversation. So with that said, let's dive in. Enrollment is now open. Hey ladies, guess what? Have you been secretly wondering how you can work with me one-on-one and also get access to my amazing community of like-minded women who are here to blaze their own path in parenting and life? If you are, head on over to Mom Is In Control, as we are now accepting applications for Mastery and Soul Elite. These are two different levels of coaching. One is the foundation of conscious parenting, emotional intelligence, helping you feel in alignment with your time and your energy. And the other one is for 6- and 7-figure established business owners who want to up their leadership game and create sustainability in their lives. So for those of you who apply in May, you have sweet, sweet access to some amazing bonuses, which I will talk throughout the podcast in the coming days. So head on over to momisincontrol.com, fill out your application, and once you do, you'll get on the phone with someone on my team for an introductory call, and then you and I will connect. Just know you are very capable of making magic happen in your life, and you have the courage to do it.
All right, Miss Deanne, I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for, we finally got this appointment in alignment.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here too.
So ladies, of course you can hear my voice is a little off and this is just real life. So I have the deep, sexy voice going on, but I'm so excited to have Deanne Barrett here. I wanted to talk to you about raising teenagers.
Yeah.
That's always fun. It's not even so much raising, it's understanding them.
Yeah. And so much about getting curious about like what is going on in your mind and how can I understand that?
Yeah. So this is, okay. Let's talk about this. Okay. First of all, you have like a huge summit going on. That's like going on this week. So can you just quickly talk about that? We'll talk about it at the end as well.
Yeah, you bet. So I have interviewed, okay. So very short story. A friend of mine chooses a word for every year and I hadn't done that, but in January, this word kept coming to me. I kept hearing people talk about radiance and I was like, ooh, that sounds juicy and wonderful. I want to be more radiant. And then I thought about who do I know that's radiant? Cause that's always my model, right? Who do I know that's doing that? And so I talked to a whole bunch of moms, Heather included, who are radiant. And it's not about physical beauty, although they're beautiful too, because they have this glow, this inside knowing who they are and learning how to share that and lead their families with that, lead their communities, their businesses with that. So Radiant Mom is a collection of conversations with 20 moms who are really real about how they are radiating their light, their love, with their families and communities. And it's available for free for the month of May. You can go to radiantmom.ca and grab your spot. And every day you'll get a different interview.
Awesome. I love it. Cool. Okay. So this is, and I noticed my friend Jen Oliver is on there too.
Yeah. Jen Oliver. I think Bree Stedman might be a person as well.
Yes.
So we've got women in Australia, Belgium, Luxembourg, Canada, United States. If you speak English and have a computer or a phone, you can access this.
So I think this segues us into this conversation because something that I'm noticing more and more in my life as a mother, raising three boys, the first thing that people say to me is, oh my gosh, you must be so busy. Or, oh, that's a handful. My inner response is I must be doing something wrong because it's not. Mm. And even though I teach this stuff, right? Like I teach it, I live it, but I do get this little like question. I still get these like, oh, maybe it's supposed to be harder. So then I ask myself, well, how did I get here? And I don't really realize how I parent differently. So I think this is going to be a really good conversation. So my boys now are 14, 9, and 6. And you and I have chatted offline about, 14-year-old. And people are like, oh, he's 14. Like, all these things must be coming up. And I'm like, we're human, right? We have developmental stages. But I really also just want to point out the huge pink elephant in the room. And I think this is part of like the mission and message that I am just like trying to scream from the rooftops, which is this, this culture in motherhood of chronic fatigue and overwhelm and depletion and resentment and anger. Like every meme I see about, the dad flu or the man flu versus the mom flu. Mm-hmm. And so, cause I'm sick right now. I saw this meme yesterday and I was like, you fucking choose that. Like you choose to get off your ass and like still try to run the house and be like, look at me, look at me, look at me. So too often the messages out there for women are motherhood is not sustainable. It's going to slowly kill you from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And I am like here to preach, like I tried that way. It almost did kill me. Nope. It doesn't need to be that way. So when people are sending me these messages, I look and I'm like, oh crap, am I doing something wrong? Why do I still do that? When I know that they're just in a different mindset than me. And then can we kind of reverse engineer how we do get to this place of like alignment in our parenting, especially with teens?
Yeah, that's a great question. And especially in the teenage years. So I taught high school students for 14 years and I taught teens for that long until I had before I had my own kids. So I'm always parenting, thinking about what can I do now that's going to be sustainable and that's going to work for them when they're older. And what do I need to know? And what do I need to let go of now so that when they're teenagers, I can really see them or who they are. And so we have that added layer when our kids hit the teenage years that we have this culture that says teenagers are scary. When I started teaching, people would say, oh, Deanne, you're so brave to teach teenagers. I'm like, wait a minute, you must not have ever known a nice teenager, you know? But these are also the people we trust to babysit our young children and to, you know, create social change in lots of ways. And teenagers, so we have this added layer of, so we have two things going on. This like mom should be depleted thing and this raising teenagers is scary thing. And so then it's that double whammy that we're hit with. And so a lot of the work that I do is helping people see who their teenager is and really get curious about who that person is. And when you know how to do that, it's not hard. And when you know how to read into your kid and the kind of energy they have for the pace of their life, and you know the energy and pace that you would like to have in your life, then, and you know how to sync those things up, then that's where the ease comes in. And when you know how to turn off the bullshit voices of you should be doing this, your kid should be in these activities, should, when you can turn that off, then you're right. It is so much easier because you're not always getting hooked into someone else's idea of what you're supposed to do in your life.
I just had a huge aha when you said, we hire these kids to babysit our children. And it's like, guys, if you're, you know, if you trust this child, this teen, girl or boy, like we need to give them a lot more credit and respect than what we do, I think, culturally.
Absolutely.
I do see that we are still in a culture of like, you know, us versus them. Like I have the say, you do not. My son, I told you this before, I was like, I'm now transitioning into a place in my business where, I'm very mindful of what I say about my children and their experience because it's not my story to tell. So some stories I do tell and I do get their approval. And this one, I did get his approval, but he, you know, something happened. There's conflict at school, as like most children have at some form or the other. And he said to me, Mom, I actually don't have a voice at school. Like they're not listening to me. And I stood there looking at him thinking, you're right. And it's not even at school, it's culturally, right? Children do not have a voice. Even though we think they do, they don't. So any curiosity that you have about that? And then I have lots of questions for you directly from the community.
Yeah. So, you know, having lived in the institution of school for forever, for my whole life, you know, I went right from being in school and then university and then teaching school. There's so much that we do that is all about school and we lose the sense of this is we're living with people every day. And so on one hand, teachers are really overwhelmed. And when you get into that state of overwhelm, it's really hard to hear what adolescents are saying, especially if you're cemented in a viewpoint that says, I know what I'm talking about. You just have to learn how to fit yourself into this system. And there are lots of teachers who have a very different perspective than that, but it's so culturally embedded in schools that that is sometimes the default. And especially when we're stuck in overwhelm and stress, that's the default. You need to fit into the space I'm creating. But when we can really hear how we can co-create things, even with 35 adolescents, then we're in a place where we can see and ask that question, what's the point of all of us being here in this room together? Because otherwise, we could do this digitally, right? But we're not. we're still meeting together live in person, in a physical building, in a physical room. Why? How do we maximize this? How do we make a difference here? How do we really see each other? And how do we really feel each other's energy and make a difference? And a lot of people want to call this character education. I think it's much bigger and much more powerful than any canned program or label someone could give it. What do we do when we're together physically in a room? How do we make that happen? And part of it is by recognizing everyone's got a piece of that pie. Everyone has an experience they're having in that room. How do we hear what they have to say about that? But here's the thing. When we're in an institution where the kinds of responses that kids are asked to give are, we get in this trap of the teacher will say, ask a question, and it's like the teacher's holding on to the magical answer and the kid just has to match it up. If we are only stuck in that kind of conversation, that's not a conversation. That's like verbal match up the pieces. But when we're in a place where we are able to actually solicit genuine feedback from students, students need help to know how to do that. Okay, so here's an example at home that everyone can relate to. When I ask my kids, what do you want for dinner? My kids are 6 and 8. So what do they want for dinner? Candy. And I'm like, okay, so what do you want for dinner that could include some protein and some vegetables is a much more specific question. And then I'm not getting resentful, like my kids want candy all the time. They think it's reasonable for dinner. You know, I'm not going to have to share that story because I was more specific in what I was asking. And then my kids can be more refined in their answers. Another question we could ask in the classroom: how could I make this a more welcoming place for all of us? And kids might say, well, I don't feel comfortable here. It's like, okay, how can I help you feel more comfortable? Well, like make things easier, right? And then teachers get like mad and frustrated. My job isn't to make things easier. But wait a minute, what was the quality of the question? How could I make you more comfortable? Okay, and in those moments where being uncomfortable is part of your learning, because you're struggling with, I don't know this, I don't feel very smart, how can I help you feel more capable? How can I help you understand the next question? And so getting really refined in what are we asking for? And how can we help our adolescent students or our young children, no matter what age they are, how can we help them enter into a conversation where we really are interested in their answers? Because we've asked a question where we really care about what their answer is.
Ooh, that's good. When we are really interested in their answers. I think that's the key here, is that we're interested in their answers. So playing off of that, I was taking some notes and you said something, I don't think you said classroom culture, but that's what I wrote down. And I just spent a week with a whole bunch of women in business. And a lot of these ladies were talking about company culture, mm-hmm. and how, you know, in corporate, there's like a shift in, you know, actually hiring people to come in and assess the culture in a business model, which is the same damn thing as looking at a classroom and assessing the culture of a classroom and saying, oh, great, like people don't feel safe here, or they, you know, this is why there's a disconnect. Like there's no respect, there's no order, there needs to be whatever. So I do notice a shift culturally. It's pretty slow. And I probably have a little more access to it than like the average individual, because it's a little bit like ingrained in the work that I do. So I see some of those people, but I think, you know, it's going to take a little bit before it gets into the classroom rather than focused on discipline, right? So instead of looking at classroom culture, which is kind of the conversation we're having, what I often see is in the education system, they're more focused on behavior modification within the child instead of looking at the whole culture. What is your perspective on that? Like seeing the child's behavior as a language, and rather than like, you did something bad, here's a consequence for it, as to getting to the root cause of why that behavior happened in the first place.
Yeah. And I think we get really the beauty of educational spaces, especially public education, is that there's a lot of different people who are there. And when we can learn through that, that's really can be amazing. When we get to a place, especially in high schools, where kids are more slotted into the place where they belong. I'm using air quotes, where they belong. And so we have kids who are, we think, you know, they have this grade, so they're at this academic level, so they'll be in this course. We have kids who are struggling with their behavior, and so they'll go in this course. We have kids who are in teenage bodies, but do not have the brain and the developmental capacity yet of teenagers, so we'll put them in this course. And those are all, it's like categorizing people based on one label. It's like, we'll put all the women together and then say, oh, they're all the same. That isn't actually the case. And so within every classroom, every teacher is trying to differentiate and trying to make it work for the actual people they have in the room. And when they're trying to hold all of that in one container, that can be beautiful and messy and so challenging and frustrating. And so then the question becomes, you know, who's not fitting in the kind of container I've created? And can I change the nature of the container? Or do I need to just eliminate that element and say, it's this kid and you're not fitting? And what's the capacity of the group of people, the individual teacher, the culture of the school in order to make those decisions? And so there's lots of, just to describe it in that way, to describe all of the moving pieces that go into that. Okay, am I eliminating one element? This kid's got to get out because their behavior doesn't match up. Or is this something I can listen to and pay attention to? And do I have the capacity right now to get curious and say, what does this kid need? And to have that conversation where what the kid might be saying they need, you know, from my experience as a teacher, I might say, I'm hearing this, but I think this is the change that might help, that might actually be a part of what's going on here. And so that's the challenge for all of us, trying to meet up with what a person is able to verbalize and what is actually happening for them, that we have the wisdom that we could change.
Oh, man. Okay. What is that quote about we ask questions? What am I trying to say? There's a quote about how we're like asking questions, but we're not listening.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like we ask to respond with our own response rather than listening to what they have to say.
Yeah.
And I think this is like a core skill that if we all learn as humans, parents, teachers, whoever, the world will be a better place, different, more alignment, less arguments. And it's like really hearing people, right? But too often we get in our own way of like, it's my fault or I'm not good enough. So can we talk a little bit about, I'm going to sneeze one sec. Oh, let's see if it comes out. I'm like, can I ask you the question quick enough before I sneeze? Let's talk about how to get, and I'm using air quotes, how to get a teenager to respect you, whether it's in a like a parent or a teacher scenario. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think to hold both things, what you just said about really listening, the way we can learn to really listen to other people is to learn to really listen to ourselves. And here's an example. When I was teaching and had two toddlers at home, you know, and I was taking them to daycare and then going to teach every day and had a class of 40 students in every class, all I wanted was a clean and organized house. I just want a clean and organized house. And I realized, I heard myself saying that a lot, and I realized I needed to dig deeper, and that's not what I really needed. I needed to, then we were deciding, okay, what can we make this easier? Okay, let's get a nanny. And then I won't have to take the kids with me out the door. That'll make it easier. But when my husband and I were listing out what qualities we wanted in a nanny, I was in tears. And I said, I want to do this. I want to read them stories. I want to take them to the park. So it was that listening. What was I saying on the surface? And what was really, take it a few layers deeper, what did I really need and want? And so that's the key for learning how to listen, is listening to ourselves. That's also the key for getting teenagers to respect us. when we are able to listen to ourselves, we have that strength and that capacity to then listen to others. Because when I get some really harsh feedback from a teenager or my own kid or someone else that I'm working with, I'm instead of automatically being on the defense and wanting to push it away, I can pull it a little bit closer and say, can I take a look at this? Do I have the courage to consider, what if this is true? And that's the question. What if this is true? And we don't have to like take it in as a sponge and feel like everyone hates me and I'm a horrible person and I'm a horrible teacher. But what if this is true? What changes could I make? And knowing that if a person has said it to you, it's definitely true for them. They're experiencing you that way. And whether you have to hold that as a core belief that that's absolutely true for you in every circumstance, isn't it? But in that moment, I'm receiving this feedback. If I take this as true, what's my next step? So that we can change and we can make the relationship better. So both things, tuning into listening to ourselves, makes us a better listener and allows us to be trusted and respected by teenagers especially.
You just said relationship, making it a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Or making your relationship better. So actually seeing that, like you're having a relationship with each child in your classroom that you're connecting with. There's something I teach called, it's based off of Danielle Laporte's desire map, like how do you want to feel? Mm-hmm. So she talks about, you know, it's not the clean house that you want. It's the feeling, right, of control or feeling clean or organized or whatever. And so when you dive deeper, let's just say it's clean or decluttered or whatever. How can you transfer that skill into other areas of your life? So for me, respect is not so much a core desired feeling, but I'm always asking myself, how would I want to feel in this situation, right? Or how do I want to feel in my parenting? So if I want my children to respect me, I have to respect them. What does that look like? That looks like, you know, when my child does something that I don't approve of, I'm not raising my voice and taking everything away from them and going, you're grounded for the rest of your life and blah, 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 because they're just going to clam up and they're actually losing more respect for me. But if I can lean in and go, hey, like, why did that happen? And have a deeper conversation around, I'm very curious, like, why did that happen? It might actually be multiple conversations that you have with somebody. But I think this is really, really important to get to like the core of like, how do we want to feel in our classroom, in our life, in our relationships? Because like you said, you know, the teacher child is a relationship. And I do often find that how we show up in one relationship in our lives, you know, it might not be directly where you're like, oh my God, I could be so nice to this person, but then my kids, oh, I treat them like crap. Or, you know, I'm great to the children in my classroom, but then I go home and I'm screaming and yelling at my own children. So what do you say to that person that's like, I just can't, I'm be so reactive. Like, I feel so lost. Like, I've been teaching like this forever. I've been parenting like this forever. I'm really trying to get through to my, we're kind of talking about teenagers here. I'm really trying to get through to my teenager. And where do I start? What do I do? I feel like I've lost the trust of my child.
Yeah, that's a big one. And you nailed it when you said, think about how you want to be treated. And it's a revelation to come back to remembering that we all want the same thing, especially at home. We want to be loved and accepted. But the big conflict comes in when, as a kid, we want to be accepted, but our parents keep telling us that what we're doing is unacceptable. And that is a really big clash. I want you to accept me and love me unconditionally. And part of that is helping the children and teens be seen And the question that you said, that curiosity is feeding that. I see you. I see you struggling. On a good day, I know that wouldn't happen. But here you are in a struggling day. And so you have all this, what I call sideways behavior, all those things that we could list that annoy us or things that our kids do that are not their best. And so how do we get curious about that? I see you struggling. I see you, and then name the behavior. I see you doing this. What's happening? How can we work together so that doesn't happen again? You know, how does it feel when you're that way? And that helps name two things. I see your behavior, and we both know this isn't the way that you want to behave. And I'm getting curious about you and want to see you more. I want to see into this situation, know how you're thinking about it. And that's one way that we can kind of diffuse that. I want to be accepted, but the parents find you unacceptable thing is getting curious. And also recognizing that, you know, if we think in our own lives about a moment when we've screwed up, that doesn't feel good. And we know we've screwed up, and we know we wouldn't want to do it again. And so what do we need in those moments? We need a little bit of grace and some love that, okay, I'm still okay. I still have some good things about me in my life, even though I messed up. And now what am I going to do so I don't mess up in that way again? Because this feels terrible. And so helping parents see how they can come into this as working on the relationship and helping their child learn. And that as adults, we are still learning this thing. When I screw up, how do I not screw up in that same way again? Knowing I'm going to screw up in different ways, but how do I just not repeat that same thing so that I'm not in that uncomfortable position again? Because I think parents get worried that, you know, the only thing that's going to keep my kid from screwing up is me disapproving of it. And that just is a zero-sum game. No one's going to win that one.
Right. I feel like this takes a lot of like just hearing you. And I talk to so many parents on a regular basis that are like at their wits' ends, right? Like people want the quick fix. And it truly is a mindset that if you're seeking a quick fix, like you're never going to find it. One, it doesn't exist. People have to realize that relationships are a commitment, and this isn't just like a one and done, like go to a therapy session and you're good to go with your kid. There is a lot of self-reflection, and not too many people talk about that with like, it's always like, oh, fix my child. Like what's wrong with them? What's wrong with their behavior? But I'm questioning, because I've seen this in my own parenting journey, that when I'm really trying to create connection with my child and I have broken that trust just based off of like human conditioning, right? Like my child just like losing respect for me because I, you know, discipline them or whatever. And I'm like, give me feedback on what I can do better. Like for a child to actually give you authentic feedback is going to take a lot of like space and vulnerability and introspection of non-reaction. Like, hey, mom, your drinking is really affecting my behavior. I don't drink, but I'm just saying like someone saying that to their kids. Mm-hmm. Hey, mom, you're working. The amount of hours that you work really affects me. Hey, like for you to get that feedback that might sting a little bit. Hey, mom, you always criticizing, or you helicoptering or overparenting, or, you know, I don't want to do this sport. I'm actually physically exhausted for the amount of activities that we're doing. I want to do less. Like that takes a lot of self-reflection to hear these things. So the original question when I asked you, like, how do we start to gain that trust back from our kids? It's going to take time regardless. Like you're really going to have to do that inner work of trusting your children. I didn't know if you have anything else you wanted to add to that, because I just often find people like, what's wrong with me? What am I doing? Like, you don't understand my kid. And I just don't see that. Like, I don't believe in bad children. I just believe in misunderstood people.
I'm with you. And really a part of it is I am always reminding moms, this is a long-term commitment. You know, this relationship, what do you want? Do you want your kids to look after you when you're in a nursing home, when, you know, if you have the privilege of living that long? This is a long-term relationship.
Children are an investment. So yeah, be careful.
That's right.
Be careful because you'll be, that's funny.
Yeah. And so recognizing, but we get caught because especially, you know, as a high school teacher, there's so much cultural conditioning that you've got to make it work in high school. You've got 3 years, you've got to get through high school, you've got to pass, you need your high school diploma. Otherwise, like, your life is going to be nothing. And recognizing, like, actually, it's the easiest and cheapest way if you can do it in 3 years, but there are lots of people who find other ways to do it because the experiences they have, the emotions they're working through in those 3 years are not allowing them to also get their high school diploma. Like, people go through some serious stuff at a certain time in their life and it's never convenient. So if we can just let go of high school graduation in 3 years as one example, then what, right? Are you going to march your kid metaphorically at gunpoint through high school in order to get that high school diploma and then have them hate you and have you wish that those 3 years of hell didn't happen? What's most important? What kind of relationship are you building? Can you really have the courage to be brave and see what your child needs from you right now, rather than being held to this artificial timeline of graduation in 3 years?
And should we stop asking the question, what do you want to be when you're older?
Absolutely. Let's stop asking that question. And for all the moms that I work with who have put careers on hold or done part-time things to help their kids through, you know, the school years, and then they're stuck with that question.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do when your kid's done high school? Like, what are you going to do when your kid's grown up? Oh my gosh. Like, do any of us ever really know for sure what the next steps are going to be?
Yeah. I still hear people be like, what am I going to do when I grow older? And I think it's just, it's the unlearning, right? Because I love what I do now, but I know it's a constant evolution, right? And if you stay stuck in that quote unquote job or whatever, you evolve as a person, your mind evolves. And I'm like a quick mover, meaning somebody who, when I'm focused on growth, I grow very, very quickly. So then new things will come in and I'm like, oh my God. So if I hang on to the past, the present is not going to open up for me. And I think the same happens for our children. And I think this plays off of what you were just saying, but there's a lot going on in the teenage mind, like growth-wise, hormonally. And I think the last question we need to ask them is like, what do you want to do when you're older? Like, you know, do you need to go down the science path? Do you need to go down this path? Like, there's so many alternatives to education. Like, okay, you know, they took all art in high school. Who fucking cares? Now they want to go to med school. Great. They can take some night classes or do something else. But yeah, I think it's the timeline. We have to really watch our, I think it's a secret belief that my child's success is a reflection of my worth. And, a lot of people won't admit that, but it's very true that if your child fails, you ultimately feel like a failure as a human. And that is like the biggest like spiritual growth of all, is to not be attached to your child's accomplishments or lack of.
Absolutely. And I think a more powerful question to that, what are you going to do after high school or when you grow up, is what lights you up? And helping kids realize that the things that light them up are on purpose, and how can they keep pursuing that? But we get scared. Like, that's not a sustainable way to, you know, make money. It's like, wait a minute, but that's a sustainable way to live your life. If you keep following those things that you're driven towards, keep going after them, because often parents will say, how do I motivate my kid to do this? It's like, they've got to be interested. They've got to find out what they love and move towards that. And another secret key is you have to know a little bit about something before you can be curious about it. So all those, you know, parents who are saying, I want my kid to be exposed to a lot of things, there's some truth in that, because when they know a little bit, then they can get curious about knowing more. But we live in a world where the kinds of careers that are available to them have not even been created yet.
Yeah.
And so we have to get them to see, okay, what am I interested in? How can I grow more of that? And who can I serve with the skills that I have? Who can I help? How can this benefit someone? Because when they have that human connection of seeing, I'm here for a reason. The gifts and skills and talents that I have are here to share with someone else, and I'm just figuring that out. Those are more compelling questions that will serve them for their entire lifespan than that like cemented, like, what's the thing you're going to do?
Well, I'll tell you right now, no one ever asked me what lights you up when I was younger. I didn't know what that was. I don't feel like a lot of my childhood was ever lit up because I didn't have the opportunity to explore what I enjoyed. And so I tried to put myself in those boxes of what does society want me to do? Who should I be? But I noticed that now that I am the person I am today and I ask my children those questions, there's an unlearning that needs to happen because they're like, Mom, you don't just do what lights you up. And I'm like, but you know, that's called like soul death. Right? Like I'm like, don't do what I did. Right? Like, please, if you learn anything, it's like, make your soul happy. I truly believe. I'm like, money will come. And I know that's a stupid saying. And if I heard this, I'd be like, you guys are all liars. And I don't mean by money will come as like, just do what you love. Money will come. You have to legit ask for it. But being in the entrepreneurial space, I look at like, the problems that I need solved in my life. I'm like, oh, if someone would just do this. And I say it to my son all the time, the oldest. I'm like, this sounds silly, but I'm like, I know you don't like cleaning up dog poop. Okay. You don't want to clean up dog poop, but you enjoy freedom and you want to be able to do whatever you want to do. And he has like an entrepreneurial spirit and you want money because you want a new bike or whatever. If you put out a flyer, you would make so much money cleaning up dog shit just on our street alone. And you wouldn't have to work for anybody and you wouldn't be making minimum. You could probably make more money than minimum wage cleaning up dog poop. The point of that is do what you love, buy your bike, do your photography. But yes, you have to focus your energy and attention on making money. But if you love helping other people and he loves animals, maybe he's walking the dogs and then cleaning up the poop in their yard. My point is you can always make magic happen if your brain is focused on possibility and it's open. And I think we underestimate our power as quote unquote authority, but parents and teachers on the impact that we make in these children's lives, in these teens' lives, because we are focused on closed-minded thinking. Like, well, if you're not good at science or math or this or that, like, therefore, I really don't know what box to put you in. So this looks at the child and says, who are you? What do you need from me? Like, okay, you know, there's a disconnect here. There's no respect. There's no motivation. Let's ask the deeper why. What is really going on here? I always get the question asked of like, how do I get my child motivated? How do I get, you know, how do I get him or her more independent? What's your perspective on that? And then we'll wrap it up because I know we could talk forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. The question about motivation is figuring out what naturally motivates your child. What do they love? And how can you structure that in so they can do more, get more of what they love so that those things like the dog poop task or the, you know, completing their math homework task, whatever it is that they don't want to do, that they can do that because they realize that gives them access to what they really want. So lean in and listen to what your kid really needs and wants and help them figure that out because that's what they'll have to do in their adult life, right? There's always going to be some annoying things that we have to put up with in our lives, tasks we have to do that we don't want to as an adult. So the sooner your kid can learn how to say, first this, then I get what I want. First, I have to handle these uncomfortable things and then I get free time. If we can set it up that way and help them have enough of that joy, love, stuff that they love in their life, then we can help them see that it's a ladder. You do this thing and then you get that thing that you want. The other piece of that is helping them learn how to do that for themselves when they're an adult. And so whenever parents are saying like, I think I'm doing too much for my kid, or I don't think my kid is ready for the adult world, part of it is, okay, what skills do they have? What skills do you think they need? And how are they going to learn them? Some things they may learn from their peers once they're out of your house, because they'll realize it's a necessity. And so that's the question. How much structure do they need? And is there a place where you can let it go? And how can you see your relationship as being more than just doing tasks for your kids? Because I see so many moms get stuck there. You know, they know, I know I'm doing too much for my kid right now, but I am also scared that that's the only thing that's keeping us connected. And so when we have the courage to recognize that, then we have the opportunity to say, I can do better. I can connect with my kid in a more powerful way. What do we both love? And sometimes it's, what is it like to meet someone new? Pretend your kid is someone that you've never met before. And then what? How do you create a relationship from scratch? And having that beginner mind can give you access to things you might not have thought of before. Well, I love to go for ice cream. He loves to go for ice cream. Let's start there. Hey, do you want to go for ice cream? Let's say this is a new chapter in our lives. We're recreating our relationship at this stage. And know that you'll hit that point lots of times in your life. And there's never a point where this isn't available to you, because every year your kids get more independent, know more about the world. So whether you have an 8-year-old or an 18-year-old, you can come at it with a beginner's mind. How do you get to know an 8-year-old? How do you get to know an 18-year-old? Pretend it's not your kid and get curious about what can we base our relationship on now, so that it's not about mom doing tasks for this kid, but it's more about shared time, shared interest, maybe a shared sense of humor. See what you really have that you can connect with your kid that is going to be more lasting and more high quality and bring more joy than just the mom stuff.
I think that's so, so important. I really like that. The curiosity of like, who is this person? There was something you mentioned and I wrote down discomfort, allow your child to be uncomfortable, but also like allowing yourself to be uncomfortable. And it's kind of just playing off of what you talked about with like, you know, we're doing so much. I know I do a lot for my kid. And you know, you can get away with it because it's culturally appropriate, but it is a very scary, slippery slope, because there's a lot of women that I speak to that are married to men who are like adult children. And there is this cultural epidemic of like moms doing way too much for their boys and them not knowing how to wipe their own ass when they're adult men. And then it ties into the patriarchy and all of that fun stuff. And, you know, I notice it takes a lot of conscious effort on my behalf to go, he is very capable of doing this. Like I can let it go. But I think like what you were saying is you're constantly almost redesigning your relationship with your children, because, in like the bigger picture of like doing less for your children and like allowing them to be independent, it is very important to do that while they're still in your home. And of course there's going to be, like allowing your children to like make their own lunch, for example, right? Like there's an integration process. Of course there's going to be resistance on their behalf, but if that's something that you really value as a woman and you're like, oh my God, it's so easy for me, I'm just going to get it done quickly. What are your children going to understand about nutrition when they're older, if they've like never learned how to cook or like pack anything for themselves? So allowing, for me, it's, I definitely have to sit with my discomfort of like, oh my gosh, I could just buy him this. Oh, I'm at the store. I'm right here. Oh, it's no big deal. It's just $50. But the importance of allowing my child to like save that money and purchase it himself goes above and beyond. And I do have to do so much checking in with like, Heather, don't do it. Heather, don't do it. It takes a lot of self-awareness to back off And I think that is the big trigger for women, especially because, you know, everyone parents differently, but we just want our children to be comfortable and safe all the time. And knowing that that doesn't serve them in the long run. So Deanne, thank you. I feel like we could sit here all day and talk about this. So many nuggets of truth and awesomeness. What is that, like, the takeaway message for the mother that's listening going like, OMG, this was so great. Now I'm going to re-enter into the world, stare at my kid and go, where do I start? What do you say to her?
I keep coming back to that phrase that we hear in nearly every yoga class, and it's namaste. But namaste is the light in me sees the light in you. And when we can come back to that, it's that moment where we sneak into our kids' room before we go to bed at night and we see them laying there, you know, our precious little angel. And no matter what has happened in the day, we just are so grateful and our hearts like expand out to them because we love them so much. That's that feeling of namaste, of recognizing that there's a light in us and there's a light in them. And in that way, we can see ourselves as equals in terms of we're both here to learn from each other. And that helps us recognize, what am I learning in terms of the self-reflective process of being a parent? And then what is my kid learning along the way? And knowing that the things are very similar, living with discomfort, having relationships that are complicated, being able to be independent, but also relying on one another because we're family, and recognizing that we're both on a learning curve, and just checking in with, what's the learning curve for me right now? What's the learning curve for them right now? And are we at a level of discomfort that's okay? Because when we get to a level of discomfort that is not okay, we need to pull in more resources. But when we're at, okay, this is uncomfortable, but we can do it and it's purposeful, then that's a really great check-in moment. So that's really the namaste moment, recognizing there's a light in me, there's a light in your child, and what are we learning right now?
Love it. Thank you. Where do you hang out? Where can people find you?
People can find me at radiantmom.ca or on Instagram at radiantmomtribe.
Thank you so much, Deanne.
Thank you, Heather. It was awesome.
Engaging with Heather and her program has been a major step for me. Before starting the program, I was quite lost. Things were quite dark. I lost my way in parenting and even following my dreams. I was really angry. I felt like my kids didn't listen to me. I felt like everything was just way too much work to even just do, through, you know, everything from making the grocery list to doing my job to anything at the house, engaging with my husband and my kids. Everything was just lots and lots of work, and I just lost my way. And I knew there was more to life, and I knew that I needed to engage with someone. And I chose to engage with Heather, and through a few conversations and starting the program, things started to come to light. It was hard at first. It's work. It really is work. But like Heather talks about in her podcast and through the program, you have to do the work to see results. And I really dedicated my time doing the work daily. And after a few months in the program, I can say that I'm seeing the light. I'm seeing the balance, the creativity coming out of me, the ability to make everything easy. Yes, there's still difficult moments, but like I can work through them. I can make the right decision to make that next step. I can, you know, make the day great by spending a little bit more time on myself or focusing on my children a different way. The tools in her program really work, and I've really benefited from all of it and can't wait to see what's to come the next few months in the program.
I sometimes joke that I wish I taught people how to make green smoothies for a living, but I know I'm doing that because I'm trying to run away from what brings me joy. And what brings me joy is helping women and men, families in general, and children feel alive. And sometimes that journey to feeling alive is painful. It's emotionally uncomfortable, and it's not always easy. This is why I created the Aligned Life Quiz. So if you're tired of being tired, you want to stop just surviving, and you want to find out exactly where to focus and access realistic tools to confidently manage your energy, emotions, and impact, you can head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/life quiz. It takes you 2 minutes and it's going to show you. I call them internal leadership skills. Where do you need to focus your energy and attention for the quickest results? And also, which phase are you living in? So head on over to heatherchauvin.com/life quiz to take the Aligned Life Quiz right now. If you're ready to stop just surviving and you want to start thriving, but you don't know how to manage it all, go there. It will take you 2 minutes and it will change your life. I also on the inside show you which podcast episodes to listen to based on your quiz results. heatherchauvin.com/life, L-I-F-E, quiz.